Recording session number 23197, reel 3.
Jimmy Lane, reel 3.
Well, after the initial fairly short stay in Shillong, where they showed us, we took the canteens out because, of course, there were troops around Shillong. Of course, I remember once going to Cherrapunji, which is supposedly the wettest place in the world, and there was a small holiday camp, so-called, for troops on leave. What I thought they think they were doing out there, I don't know. But it's rather funny because when we came here to this house and my children were going to a small school in Lipuk, one of the mothers had been in charge of the camp beyond Cherrapunji. So it is a small world, isn't it? And she could remember the WASB vans coming to the troops. But anyway, after that, I was sent to Jorhat, which is basically a very large tea-growing area in Assam. Most of the troops that we dealt with there were people on gun sites. There were some line of communication people. It was very quiet there. The troops were pleased to see us, but there wasn't any, as far as I know, any much activity as far as the British Army was concerned. We weren't allowed to go. Most of the airfields were American, and we weren't allowed to go there as WASBs giving out char and wads, but we did meet a lot of them, and they were very generous because they always had much better food than we had. Our rations were pretty jolly poor. And I was there, how long? About not very long. I got malaria rather severely. And after being in hospital in Jorhat, Nin decided that I had to go home to recoup, which is what I did. And by gratitude to the American Air Force, because they flew me down to Calcutta, in one of it was going, you know, but they put me on board, so I was able to get home much more quickly than I would otherwise have done. And I had 10 days or a fortnight at home, and then came back up to Shillong, and then was posted, it must have been end of November, to a place in Upper Assam called Tinsukia, which was also all full of tea, and much the same sort of work as it had been in Jorhat. And I was very anxious to get something a bit more exciting. And happily, they sent me to Imphal, which meant a train journey down to Dimapur, and then up on this one road system. And we passed through Kohima, which of course was quite quiet then, because this was just about Christmas time, first week in January. Imphal was great. We had two canteens there. I think it was two, not more. And we went all over that valley, which was very beautiful, really very beautiful. And the Manipur is very colourful, lovely dresses, and they had a wonderful dance team or thing. Manipur dancers were famous, and they were lovely. And the canteen work was more exciting. We went a lot further, and as I told earlier, we took the night stops trips down on the Tamu and Tidham Road. Not so frequently. Every day we were out locally. I mean, we'd go 30 or 40 miles or something, and we started off early too. We loaded the canteen as soon as we came home in the evening, and we always had a British driver, and they were always super and helpful and would carry the heavy stuff, you know. I remember particularly, and this is a personal thing, after my husband and I became engaged, we had at that time we had a Scotsman. He wasn't a member of our thing. He was in the RAF, and on his day off, he used to come around and give us a hand. And because I was Scottish too, he thought that was good. But when he heard I had got engaged to a Sassenach, I was off. It was awful. Fancy letting the side down like that. Jock, I don't know what happened to him.
Did you ever drive?
Oh, 1,500 weights, but not the canteen. It was very heavy. No power-assisted steering. I don't think we were allowed to, actually. 1,500. I got lent a Jeep once and had to give it back when I moved, and that was sad. And somebody else in Dimapur, when I was after Imphal fell and we came back, somebody whoever looked after vehicles said I could have this 1,500 in, which I discovered when I started to drive it, that somebody had put the gears back in. You had to go into reverse to go forward and into first to go back. So everything was slightly reversed, but it got us around. That was an incredible place, actually, the camp in Dimapur. It had these enormous, enormous trees. It was always raining when we were there. I think it's very wet there, always. Very damp. These enormous trees, which felt like hundreds of feet high, with only the foliage at the top. And they were quite sort of not pre-civilization looking trees. That was where we had a visit from Vera Lynn. I better be careful about what I say, I think. She was very pleasant. We put her up, and it was great having her, because when they knew she was coming to stay with us, incredible rations arrived, cans of this, cans of that. None of which we had seen, you know. We really were very badly looked after as far as rations were concerned. And she was very sweet, but she made us very cross, because we used to go around the hospitals, and there were a number of very, very badly wounded people in there. I remember one particular chap who was blind, and he took from out of his wallet, out under his pillow, the photographs of his family. And you had to be terribly careful that you didn't muddle, because he remembered exactly how they were, and he wanted to tell other people. And I found that very moving. The wounded were marvelous. The Japanese had started using those awful weapons that shot fire, you know, and there were a lot of badly burned people. But Vera Lynn refused to go around the hospitals and sing, because I expect it was her manager's fault, because he was there too. She said she had to keep her voice for the concerts in the evening. And we felt that the able-bodied who could go to the concerts weren't quite as much in need as the others. And we had Elsie and Doris Waters, and they were great. They went round the hospitals and talked. I mean, they couldn't sing. Do you remember Elsie and Doris Waters? Very few people do. And Noel Coward came, and it was good. Very good. I think that's all the famous I can remember. But Dimapur was a horrible place, it really was. But the first stage after that was up to milestone 33. And
that's on the way to Kohima, is it?
Kohima was just being liberated, as it were. And we started to go up and then through Kohima. And I can remember, I was talking about it the other day. It's a bit nasty, actually, but there was a Jap body buried on the side of the road. And again, it was still raining, of course. Monsoon was there. And every day as we drove up, a bit more appeared of this body on the road. They always said of us that we once went past Kohima and were serving Japs before we knew where we were. But I think it's apocryphal. But we certainly were the first women into Kohima before the nurses came back. So,
and that was just after the siege and the battle.
Yes, it was after the. It was a battle too. I was still in Dimapur when the wounded started coming down from Kohima. We hadn't retaken it by then.
And were there many of them?
Oh, a lot.
Yes. Could they cope? You know, what were their...
I think the hospitals coped very well. It was almost a staging post, I think. They came down from first aid stations to and some of them couldn't fly them out of Kohima. You see, no airstrip. They came down to Dimapur, and I suspect some were flown away, but certainly the hospitals there were full. And then they took them out by air to places like Skanderbeg. It had enormous hospital facilities. That was what Skanderbeg did then. But...
And did you, were you serving your char and wads to the...
Yeah,
wounded?
No. I don't think we were baking cakes then, because we weren't, there was nowhere there to cook. Just tinned stuff and cigarettes and pipe tobacco and orange squash. And soap was a great thing. Masses of Lifebuoy soap. Lifebuoy and, what was the white one called? Sunlight. They bought lots of soap. And they were so good, you know. When we were at Milestone 33-34, we had this group which belonged to Corps headquarters, I think, next door. And the chaps were always around. And this was after Kohima fell. There was a 1,500 weight came down with, I think, four Japanese prisoners in the back. And they looked terrible, absolutely awful. They obviously had been hungry for a long time, and they were dirty and miserable. And the soldiers were all around that truck handing them cigarettes and, you know, just being nice. And I thought that was amazing, and I can't think of any other people who would do it. So they were good. That was the worst place for rations. I remember the ration truck arriving one day, and it had one tin of milk and one pineapple bad, which was to feed four women. So we spent our wages in the canteen.
So this would have been when you were going after the battle.
Yes,
you were going.
We were
as
going.
A best
we were going
into Kohima.
That's
yes.
Right.
Yes. What was it like when you got into Kohima?
Messy. It's what you thought that. I only think the way I can describe it is having seen photographs of the Western Front in the First World War. That was what Kohima looked like. And one could remember it from seeing it several months before, when it was a beautiful little hill station. You know, just trees chopped off and mud again. But I remember going up there once. We must have been going up in a three-ton truck, and I can't remember why. But coming behind us was Lord Louis in his jeep. And that was great, because he's so attractive, he was. I didn't approve of what he did in India, but he did very well in Burma. I remember him, this is jumping again, before we left Imphal, when the Japs walked in, we went to an airstrip, and a friend of mine, and I, wherever we went, we tried to see if we could drive some different kind of a vehicle. And they had a roller, what do you call the things that run on the roads? You know, roller things.
Oh, steam roller.
Steam roller. So we decided we'd try that one, and I believe it never went again after that. But he came, and he did one of his speeches standing on his soapbox, and he was marvelous. He said, "You know, I've come to look at you, and I know you've come to look at me." And he stood up there and turned his face around. And the troops loved him. They really did.
And that was at...
That was in Imphal, in one of the airstrips.
Yes, it's interesting, because you were there beforehand, weren't you?
No, so I never got back to Imphal.
You didn't?
No. Because after Milestone 33, I was sent back to Dimapur. I had a lot of jungle sores on my legs. And they thought that maybe I'd do better not where it was. Well, the water was so dirty, I think that's where it came from.
Yes, that seems to have been a pretty basic place, the milestone 33-34, that was which is just before Kovima, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I can't remember how many miles. Mm. I think it was quite a drive from there. I mean, it was just about halfway between Dimapur and Kohima. I think that's why when things began to look as though they were better, obviously, or they wouldn't have let us go, that's when they decided they'd have a staging post instead of going into Kohima itself.
And were you going out from there with your canteen?
Yes.
From, yes.
Yes.
And can you remember the state of the troops that you went and
served
in? Oh,
they were always great. I never... British soldier always seems to find something that's good and funny. I mean, obviously they weren't... the ones we saw really down in Devapur before we moved up there, a lot of them had come from the Arakan and the battles there, and they weren't looking awfully happy. They were being swapped around, I think, for different regiments. But that I don't know. Don't quote me on that one. But we had one lot coming up and one lot going down. We used to have a mantra, which was, Aniwala, Janiwala, Idararainiwala. Going, coming, staying. because the ones who were staying, who were sort of local, weren't given as much in the way of attention as the other ones because they had other facilities. But then I came down to the static canteen in Dimapur, and that's where all the chaps coming back from the Wingate expedition came through.
You saw them, did you?
Oh, they were there nightly.
What sort of state were they in?
Oh, very good, very good. They'd walked a long way. And a lot of them came out on foot. But it was really a successful operation, not like the previous one, which was a disaster, really.
These would have been the Chindits?
These were the Chindits. Mm.
Yes, did you hear much about them, you know, in that earlier one, which was...
When the earlier one happened, it was before I joined the WASBs, and a regiment that we'd known in Secunderabad went off and did their jungle training, and then went off on the... I mean, it was all very secret and hush-hush. But we did know a number of people who had been killed in that first one, and that was not nice, because it wasn't right, really. They weren't ready for it, I don't think.
It was there much criticism, you know, of
Wingate? I can't remember very much. Certainly not from soldiery. I know my family were very upset because of the deaths of these people. We all were, who knew. Their jungle training was very small, or curtailed. And it was a bloomer, I think.
But the second one
was a success, I think it was. And I think it proved something to everybody that it was possible to live in jungle conditions and come out of them. But I'll never forget those gliders. Amazing. It must have been a bit like when the D-Day was going with the amounts of airplanes going out from here. Well, indeed, on bombing things, I suppose.
That would have been for the second one.
This was for the second one, yes.
Yes, that must have been quite a sight, particularly knowing what they were going
through. Well, we weren't sure. We wondered. Nobody, I mean, it was hush-hush. But one knew something massive was going on with these crowds of planes. Our digs in the bungalow we had in Imphal was next door to... a group which were very secret, and they disappeared and came back. We were always pleased to see a face come back. We knew they were doing something funny, but nobody knew what it was. What were they called? I can't remember.
Not the Chin Levies.
No, Chin Levies were a group who had been a part of the Burma army, I think, before, when there was a Burma army. Like the Karens had a sort of regiment too, but they almost were guerrilla fighters, I think, then. But we had none that I knew of. Some WASBs had married people in certainly in the Karens, Prue Brewis was a widow when, well, not when I first knew her, but he got killed in one of the things that the Karens were doing. She was pregnant, poor girl. But the Burma government isn't very kind to Karens these days. And I think it's a sad country now. To digress, one of my husband's partners went on a holiday to Burma about 3 years ago, I suppose. And I said to him, I think it was awful to go as a tourist to Burma with the government as it is. And he said to me, oh, you sound like one of my lefty friends. But I still think it's bad to go. They should be. Where had I got to?
You were saying there were Burmese girls in
A number of Burmese girls in the Wasbys. I don't think I ever knew how many, but several went all the way through, from Shillong down to Singapore. I don't know if any Burmese girl went to Japan. We sent her, this was long after my day, obviously, because of VJ Day, but we sent a contingent of Wasbys to reoccupy Japan, or occupy Japan, and it was a great experience for them. And the great excitement, I think, for Wasbys was when they were able to put their first canteens into Rangoon and feel they were home again, you know, because what they'd done before the fall was they did much what the WACI, the Women's Auxiliary Corps, India did, things like ciphers and coding and, I think, probably moving people around in vehicles. But quite differently. Nin said that we've always quite liked this one. This was sort of during my time in the Wasbys, so it was before December 44. She said, my girls are the most forward women. And we always rather liked that. I don't think she really realised at the time what she was saying, but we liked it.
You were, weren't you?
Weren't we? Yes, we were very forward. Mm. Yes, always up there with the troops.
Yes, I was wondering, and wanting to ask you about going to Imphal before the Japanese advance. Because you must have been there pretty, near the time.
Well, January, the first week in January up there. And things were really quite peaceful then. I mean, obviously things went on that we didn't know about down on the border almost. The troops were always having an exercise and so on. But there was no visible signs apart from lots of soldiers and, of course, the airstrips were flipping in and out. And we had air raids, air raid warnings. Nothing very extreme. We got up in early hours of the morning, it always seemed to be, and sit in a slit trench. But that was all. Until the beginning of March, when the Japanese started moving in. And then we heard more. And then they decided, of course, to take us out on the 18th of March. And again, I was
like, quite late, isn't it?
Yes, the whole thing was, they were there by, I think, very close to Imphal, and there were battles at a place called Ukral on the track there. I think that was the 24th, about then anyway. But they took us out, and the nurses at the same time, a long convoy of women. And my senior officer there was very good. She knew how car sick I got if I was sitting in the back of a truck, and she arranged for me to go down in a jeep. And I wasn't car sick, but we didn't get down to Dimapur until quite about 10 o'clock that night, and I was frozen, absolutely frozen. And they had no accommodation for us. They had a big sort of hall where they put us that first night, and we put down our bedding rolls and slept on the floor.
I expect it was very crowded, wasn't it?
It was crowded. We were all of us. There were how many? I said, can't remember how many Wasbys there would be then. two canteens. There must have been about 12 of us, I should think. And a lot of nurses. And they gave us something to eat that night. I can't remember what, but it was very basic. And of course, the camp that we were in, it was a sort of staging post, the camp there, for people going out of Assam, because Dimapur is still in Assam, and people coming in to rejoin their regiments in Kohima or Dimapur or further south. And it was, I think they didn't realize there were women there, because we could remember walking around. It had a sort of redoubt all the way around this camp, and we were walking along the top of this, and some poor chap was using what they called desert lilies, and he didn't know there were any women there.
They're sort of urinals.
Yes, that's right.
I suppose you'd seen a lot by then, hadn't you?
Oh, dear.
Was it a toughening experience, you know, the work you were doing with men?
It was, I don't know about toughening, it was very, very different to any life I'd led before, certainly. I think, you know, living in Hyderabad in an Indian state and was very different from a life in England, because, you know, we were sort of slightly special. And, of course, my family had been in there for three generations. So it was more home to me than Scotland, really.
And the conditions you lived in, you must have lived in very basic conditions.
What else it was be?
Yes,
yes.
So I'm thinking that your staging place.
Yes.
We
had canvas baths, you know. Somebody filled them for us, but it was, we were clean, but it wasn't very, the water wasn't very nice. And I can't remember where our drinking water came from or whether we just drank soda water out the canteen. That sounds likely. But the thing I remember most about there was that it was so wet all the time. So wet and so muddy, and you never felt quite dry. I think also was something perhaps the jungle sores did.
Yes, what are they like when you get
they're
jungle sores?
They're like ulcers, really. You know, they're all on my lower legs. No, it was... And I got impetigo, too, when I was there. But... anyway, Nin sent me back to Dimapur, and that was good. Really, it was. It was very interesting too, because these people were coming back and they talked a lot, you know. It was seeing a female they were able to.
These would be the wounded men.
Not then. That was on the strip more. This was, and then in the hospitals. But this was the Chindits coming back and coming to the canteen and getting fresh food, you know. Bangers and mash and baked beans and fried eggs, and they ate very well. And cups of tea. We of course didn't dispense any alcohol at all. It was char. But it was being able to talk to somebody, I think. I think that's what we all felt all the time. It was the most important thing that we could do as Wasbys, was talk to people.
What were they talking about?
Often just about home. And what was happening in England, and where they'd been just lately, but very much thinking about Blighty. And a lot of them had been there out of Blighty quite a long time, you know, because some of the regiments that were there before the war didn't ever go home. A lot of them got captured in Singapore.
Yes, it's often called the Forgotten Army.
Yeah, it was called, yes, that's right. We did feel we were forgotten. We didn't feel, they didn't feel either they were getting the support. I think Louis Mountbatten did a lot for that, though, that he made people feel that they were, that it was all right, going to be all right now, you know. And Bill Slim.
Yes, Bill Slim, was he...
Well, I can talk a little bit about Bill Slim, because his wife was my mother's cousin.